Meseches Nedarim, Daf Yud, where the Gemara learns from a pasuk, Adam ki yakriv miken karban laHashem. When a person from our community will present a karban to Hashem. So from this very seemingly simple pasuk, the Gemara learns an important halacha, and that is, whenever a person finds himself in a situation where they are preparing to dedicate a karban to the Beis HaMikdash, there's a very particular way in which they are supposed to give it. So one is not supposed to say, says the Gemara, LaHashem Karban. You shouldn't go to your farm and say, oh, this cow over here, LaHashem Karban. Rather, you should say, Karban LaHashem. You should choose to say it, Karban LaHashem, saying Hashem's name second instead of saying Hashem's name first. And the Gemara doesn't really explain why this is the case. The Gemara doesn't tell us why. So there's a discussion amongst the Rishonim and the Acharonim as to why this is so. Why do we care the way I designate a Karban to be given to the Beis HaMikdash? So the Rush writes there in the Gemara that the reason why is very simple. We're afraid that the person may have made a decision that they want to give a karban to the Beis HaMikdash, and then 5 minutes later they're going to change their mind and decide, you know what, this is hundreds of dollars, this animal here. I'm not prepared to give that to the Beis HaMikdash, and they're going to change their mind halfway through the sentence. So if I start off and I say, LaHashem Karban, then I've already said Hashem's name, and then I'm going to change my mind and say, before I say karban, I'm going to change my mind already, so the Gemara says we have to be concerned about that. And therefore, say it the other way around. Say, Karban LaHashem, this way, by the time you get the statement out, you've already made up your mind, and there's no chashash or bracha levatel. That's the first reason that the Rush gives. The Chassam Sofer gives a different reason, which is also equally as surprising. Again, I find the Rush very surprising as well, because how often do we find a person that changes their mind within a half a second of when they first were going to say the word, and now they're going to change their mind to say differently? It's hard to understand such a thing. But the Chassam Sofer writes something which is also surprising, and that is, we're concerned also for Shem Shamayim Levatela, that you've said Hashem's name for no reason. How so? Because he writes that perhaps we have to be concerned Shema Yamus Piso, maybe the person is going to die instantly. So you start the beginning of your sentence and you say, La Hashem, and you're planning to finish off Karban, one more word, maybe the person's going to have a heart attack right in the middle of the sentence, and then they're not going to be able to finish, and it will turn out that they said Hashem's name Levatela. That's the understanding of the Chassam Sofer. And based on that suggestion that the Chassam Sofer gives, the great Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Bar Ditchever and the Kedushas Levi suggests, maybe now we can understand the Pshat in the Medrash. The Medrash says, sometimes we have what we call a Medrash Pliya. The Medrash seems to take two very unconnected ideas and somehow puts them together, and we don't really understand what the connection is meant to be. So here the Kedushas Levi writes, we have a Medrash that states as follows, Ish ki yidor neder laHashem. When you have a person who gives a neder, any kind of item that they give back as a gift to Hashem, Hadahu dechsiv, says the Medrash, this is similar to what it says, Yameinu kitzel over, that our days on this earth are like a fleeting shadow. So what does that have anything to do with the fact that I'm giving a gift? Ish ki yidor neder laHashem, suggests the Kedushas Levi, that based on this Chassam Sofer, maybe we can understand it. Ish ki yidor neder laHashem, a person who wants to give a neder to Hashem has to say it specifically in that fashion, neder laHashem. Karban LaHashem, you have to say it in that way. Why? Because Yameinu Kitzel Over, because we know that life is so fickle, we know that life can change at any moment, and therefore we don't want to run the risk of maybe saying Shem Shamayim Levatela. Therefore he writes, this is why we have to say Neder LaHashem, Karban LaHashem, as not to get into this issue of perhaps reciting, perhaps enunciating a Shem Shamayim Levatela that was unwarranted, that was unnecessary. So the Torah Tamima finds this troubling as well. Torah Tamima writes in his commentary on Chumash that we have a Gemara in Maseches Gittin where the Gemara says, let's say you have a husband and wife who are getting divorced. So, Rachmana Litzlan, they have to get divorced for whatever reason. And the Gemara says they hate each other so much, the husband doesn't want to look at the wife doesn't want to look at the husband, but somehow we have to get a get from one party to the other. The only way that can happen is if somebody actually hands it to the other party. So the Gemara says we have an institution called Shlichus, which means husband doesn't have to be there in the presence of his wife in order to give her the get. He's able to have somebody stand in on his behalf and offer and deliver the get to his wife that is now going to be divorced from him. So says the Gemara, let's say the husband appoints someone to be his shaliach, and now he sends the shaliach away to go deliver the get to his wife wherever she lives. Why don't we have to be concerned that maybe between the time when the husband wrote the get and gave it to the shaliach and the time that he actually delivered it, maybe we should be concerned that the husband passed away? And the get really is not a get, because you can't get divorced from somebody you're not married to if they're not really alive anymore. So why do we have such an institution? So the Gemara says, come on. Lizman mu'at lo chashinan. You don't have to be concerned that in such a short period of time, maybe the husband dropped dead. Again, every once in a while it does happen, but the normal course of events is that people live on the day, yes, maybe 20, 30 years from now he's going to die, so you can't hold on to the get for that long, but we have no reason to assume that in the last couple of minutes, in the last couple of hours, in the last day or so, that a person's going to pass away, and therefore the Gemara assumes, lo chayshinan lemisa lizman muad. We don't assume that a person's going to drop dead on such a short notice on something of that nature, and therefore we assume the get is allowed to be delivered, and there's nothing to be concerned about. Well, says the Torah Tamima, if that's the governing principle, that lo chayshinan lemisa lizman muad, that we don't really think that people are going to die in such a quick turn of events, well then if that's the case, how come over here suddenly we are concerned? The Chasam Sofer writes, the reason why when I give a karban I have to say karban lahashem is because maybe if I say it the other way around, lahashem karban, after I say the word lahashem, maybe something's going to happen and then the person won't be able to finish off the sentence, and then it turns out they're going to be motzi shem shamayim levatela. So that's the kasha of the Torah Tamima, and I think it's a very strong one. We have many brachas that we recite throughout the course of our day, throughout the course of the year. And the Gemara Masechem speaks about the proper way to recite a bracha. When is a bracha supposed to be recited and how is it supposed to be recited? So the Gemara tells us, number one, we have something called a birchas hashvach, which means we see a beautiful rainbow, we see a beautiful ocean, we hear the thunder, we see the lightning, something of that nature. So we say a birchas hashvach, we give shevach to the Ribbono Shel Olam for a look at this amazing world that you have, look how powerful you are. So that bracha, the Gemara says, clearly has to be stated, sorry, the Rishonim say, that has to be stated after we've seen that which we saw. You cannot say, oh, there's about to be a thunderstorm, so maybe before I hear the thunder, I should make the bracha. It doesn't make sense. After we've taken in the incredibly overwhelming sight of lightning or of a rainbow or whatever it may be, this big ocean, a big mountain, that's when we recite the bracha, only after that. However, the bracha there cannot be recited before. When it comes to a mitzvah, on the other hand, the Gemara says, we have what we call a birchas hamitzvah, a bracha that's supposed to be recited before we perform a mitzvah. And there says the Gemara, that bracha must be recited before we perform the mitzvah. It cannot be recited after the mitzvah is performed. So the Stechemet asks, why do we have the same concern? If you're telling me that we have such a concern when a person just says, Lahashem karban, karban Lahashem, that maybe the person is no longer going to be alive to finish off the sentence, how come we're not concerned? I'm about to do the mitzvah of tkiyah shofar, and I make the bracha, asher kedushanu mitzvosav etzivanu, lishma kol shofar. Maybe something's going to happen between the time that I make the bracha and the time that I perform the mitzvah. Why don't we suggest, ask the Stechemet, why don't we always suggest that a person wait until afterward to recite the bracha after the mitzvah is done? Maybe chashinu lemisa. Why aren't we concerned that maybe someone's not going to be alive anymore? This is the strong question of the Stechemet. And the Stechemet suggests that maybe we can answer this based on a comment of the Ritva. This is a very famous comment of the Ritva, Meseches Chulin, Daf Kuf Beis, where the Ritva gives the following scenario. And it happens every so often. You have a person who sits down to a meal and they see that there's bread on the table. They decide, I'm going to get up and wash. I go to the sink, I wash my hands, make an alum tila sedayim. Now I come back to the table, I said, oh, it's really onion bread. I thought it was going to be this kind of bread, garlic bread. Huh? I didn't really want to wash. I don't really want to bench now. We all have the benching phobia. Nobody wants to be involved in that. So the Ritva asks, what happens? Do I have to now sit down and eat the bread because after all I made a bracha on the Tehillah Sedayim? So even if I don't want to eat the bread now, I change my mind in between the time that I wash my hands and I come back to the table. Do we force the person to go ahead and say, you don't have an option now, now it's too late? You could have had the option before you wash your hands, but now once you wash your hands, now we consider it too late? Or do you say, no, at the time that I washed my hands and I made the bracha, that was warranted. Now when I come back to the table and I choose not to have the bread, so if for whatever circumstance it came up that I don't want to have it, so I don't have to have it. So that's the question that the Ritva raises in Maseches Chulin, and it comes to the conclusion that that would not be considered a bracha levatela if somebody comes back to the table and chooses not to eat the bread. Why not? Because at the time that I sat down, I'm sorry, that I stood up and I washed my hands and I made the bracha, the assumption was I was doing the right thing. I was now performing a mitzvah. Since the assumption is that right now I'm doing the right thing, if later on it turns out that it doesn't come to fruition because I don't end up having the bread, at the time that I performed the mitzvah of washing my hands and making the bracha, there was no concern of a bracha levatela at all. And that is the principle that the Ritva lays down, and that's the suggestion that he makes, that under such circumstances we would not force the person to eat the bread because that would not be considered a bracha levatela should they change their minds later on. What about if I make a hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz and then I change my mind? So then it's too late. Then it's too late. But over here you have two separate mitzvahs. One mitzvah is to wash your hands. Second mitzvah is to eat the bread. If at the time that you washed your hands you thought you were performing a mitzvah because you were about to eat bread, that is not considered a bracha levatela. There's an unfortunate shiloh that comes up every so often, and that is the following. Sometimes you have middle-aged men who decide that they're going to get their tefillin checked. Haven't gotten the tefillin checked in many, many years. And I got a pair of tefillin by my bar mitzvah. Now I'm 40, 50 years old. I decide, you know, it's a high time to check my tefillin. I send it into the sofer. Turns out the tefillin were puzzled through and through. Or it turns out they weren't written on parchment. Or it turns out there were so many mistakes in there. Real obvious mistakes that make tefillin actually puzzle. So the question is, what do we do now? Are you going to tell me that all those brachas that I made for the last 20 years, they're all bracha levatala? And this is something that the Achronim discuss at great length. Should we assume that every bracha that was recited on those period tefillin that were puzzle all along, is that considered to be a bracha levatala from the start? So this is discussed in the Ben Ish Chai, has a tshuva sefer called Rav Poalim. So in the Rav Poalim, he discusses the issue, and he said he had someone in his community who much later on, much further after the bar mitzvah, found out that the tefillin that they were wearing all along were puzzle. And he was so concerned. What am I going to do about the fact that I made a bracha levatala for all those years? Every morning I put on the tefillin. Number one, I was mevatel the mitzvah saseh of wearing tefillin every day. Number two, I wore puzzle of tefillin, which means that the bracha that I made was a bracha levatala. So he gets into discussion about it, about whether he needs a tshuva or not. Then he quotes from the Chidah. And the Chidah there makes a suggestion that maybe we should assume that as long as someone was mechaven libo lashamayim, maybe we don't have to be concerned. Now that's a very dangerous statement to make. Because now the religion becomes a free-for-all. As long as I'm mechaven libo lashamayim, so I have a puzzle of tefillin. I don't need to do the right thing. Not everything has to be just exactly the right way. So what, is that really the answer? So if I think that Shabbos maybe should be kept a little bit differently because it would make me feel the aura of Shabbos a little more if I was able to drive my car on Shabbos. I'm doing it because, look, maybe I'll have a nicer Shabbos if I go to someone else's house. The only way to get there is to drive a car. So again, you can't take this out of context. The Chidah never meant to say that we should extend it to violate a halacha in the Torah. But here he says, under these circumstances where I thought I was being an Erlech Hayid, I thought I was wearing a kosher pair of tefillin, I made a bracha every day on the tefillin, and I thought everything was being done correctly, maybe I should say that as long as I was mechaven libo l'shamayim, we don't consider it to be a bracha levatala. So that's the question that he raises. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank in a tshuva takes major issue with this, and he says, what can you say? Mechaven libo l'shamayim is just going to wipe away any decision that you did, any mistake that you ever made. As long as it's mechaven libo l'shamayim, you're okay. Of course you have to do a tshuva, and he's not happy with this whole thing. So how do we paskin? So the truth is, there's a sefer, a very important sefer, called Das Kedoshim. I'm not sure how many people have ever seen it, but it's an important sefer on Hilchos Tefillin. And there, in the Das Kedoshim, he writes the following. He says, in his opinion, he thinks, we don't have to be concerned about all those years when the person wore the tefillin that were puzzle, unbeknownst to them. Why not? So he says, we have a Gemara that seems to say the same thing. The Gemara talks about a case where you have, it's a Gemara in Kiddushin, where you have a Kohen who is doing Avoda, and he's showing up to the Beis HaMikdash whenever it's his turn, and he's making the bracha on the Shechita, and doing everything that's supposed to be done. And then, all of a sudden, out of the blue, he finds out, somebody does some research on the family, finds out that he was a chalal all along. His parents really were not legitimately married, he wasn't supposed to really be a Kohen, whatever it may have been, and it turns out that he was a chalal, and that means that he had no right to be doing the Avoda all those years in the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara says that, what do we do about the fact that, let's say, along the way, I brought a carbon chatas, I was mechal Shabbos, I gave it to this Kohen to shecht on my behalf to offer in the Beis HaMikdash. It turns out, the whole thing didn't go through. So what do I do? Now everybody, we have to send out notifications to everybody who brought carbonos all those years when you were on duty. We have to bring out the fact that it wasn't really kosher and yet you weren't doing the right thing, and now everything that was done was a bracha levatala, and all the carbonos that were offered have to be redone again. Says the Gemara, no. Farech Hashem Chelo, we learn from a pasuk that if at the time that he was doing the avoda we thought he was okay, then we don't go back and say everything that happened all along has to be redone. That's the psak that the Gemara gives, and therefore based on that, the Das Kedoshim writes the same over here. We don't say you have to sit and beat yourself up and do a tshuva because all those years that you were wearing the tefillin, you thought you were wearing kosher tefillin, and it turns out now that you got them checked, they were really pasul tefillin. No, if at the time you thought you were doing a mitzvah, if at the time you thought you were warranted in making a bracha, we assume you don't have to go back on that. So that's the general implication that we have with regard to Hilchos Tefillin. But now, as it pertains to a tainus, let's just close with the following. Rashi writes in Maseches Shabbos that sometimes we have a fast day that already begins balayla. We already have a fast day that begins at night. Let's say Tisha B'Av, Yom Kippur. So Tisha B'Av, we have the situation where we fast already from the night, and we're supposed to fast till the next evening. And the question is, why do we not say Anenu, both in Ma'ariv, or at least in a fast like Shavuos or B'Tammuz, like today, we should say Anenu and Shacharis. We're all fasting this morning. Why don't we say Anenu? So Rashi says the reason why is because we have to be concerned that maybe something's going to come up throughout the course of the day. Maybe you'll turn into a chole, even though in the morning you were perfectly healthy, nothing wrong. You plan to fast throughout the day. But since it's very likely that you might end up having to break your fast, therefore Rashi says, we don't want that you should be a shakron bitfilaso. We don't want that you should say something dishonest. So you're going to say, Aneinu Hashem, Aneinu b'yom tzom tani seinu. It turns out you didn't finish the fast day. So therefore we suggest, and that is the halacha, that Aneinu is only supposed to be said later on in the day. What is later on in the day? So by mincha time, that's already late enough. If you made it this far, we assume you're going to make it further, and therefore Aneinu is recited by mincha instead of reciting Aneinu by all three tefillos on the fast day. So Rabbi Tzal Lakoin Mivilna asked a very simple question. Why do you have to say that maybe we're concerned you're going to break the fast? What about the fact that the Ritva told us that at the time that I was performing a mitzvah, I thought I was doing the right thing? That's not considered a bracha levatala, even if it doesn't turn out the way it was supposed to. For example, the case the Ritva gave was a person goes and washes Netilas Yadayim, and they were planning on eating bread. Now, after they wash Netilas Yadayim, they come back to the table and they see the bread is stale, the bread is not good, they have an allergy, whatever it might be. Do we force them to go and eat the bread? No! Why? Because the Ritva argues at the time that they washed their hands and made the bracha, they were doing a mitzvah. Because they thought they were about to eat bread, and therefore that warranted them making a bracha. It's not a bracha levatala under such circumstances. So as Rabbi Tzal Lakoin Mivilna, shouldn't the same thing be by a tainus? If I, by a fast day, get up, and I say Aneinu by Shachris, and I thought I was going to fast throughout the day, and then later on it turns out I had to break my fast, what do you want? At the time I was doing the right thing. At the time I thought I was saying the truth. At the time I thought I was going to make it through the day. So why should that pose a problem? Why does Rashi tell us here, Nimtza shakron bitfila? So it's as if you've lied to God in the way you presented a tefila. Why is that lying at all? At the time I really thought it was going to be a regular tainus. So that's a very important question, and how we deal with that is an important issue as well. Some say, well, what? Yeah. You're saying I'm offering a bakasha, that's simply not true. I would have said a bracha is worse.